Okay, here we are, February 24th. We're in the sealed book of Moses, chapter 4, verse 30. And so I sent out an email that discusses some things. In fact, I want to share my screen. Oh, not that part yet. Let me get the right one. Oh, here we go. And hopefully you guys can help me sort all this out, because I'm not sure I can sort it all out. So no, Michael, you mentioned or shared this statement from the church in the topical guide, or where it's talk about fasting, and it talks about this goat for Azazel. And it says the goat for Azazel was then brought before the altar of the burnt offering. Over it, the high priest confessed all the sins of the people of Israel, after which it was sent by the hand of a man into the wilderness to bear away their iniquities into the solitary land. This ceremony signified the sending away of the sins of the people, now expiated to the evil one, to convince him that they could no more be brought up in judgment against people before God. That's one possibility of what the Azazel goat means. I suggested to look at this other story in that document about the atonement. Did you all read through that or read some of it?
Yeah, I read the whole thing. It's very interesting that, I just read the part about Azazel. I think it kept going on the next chapter. I didn't get to that, but
yeah,
he
when
on
did
his
you
mission,
mail this out?
I mailed it out Saturday.
Oh, I've got to do some. I have a new computer and I haven't got my email set up, but my phone, I haven't seen anything on my phone, so it must not be echoing to. Anyway, I'll have to work that out.
Oh,
But
okay.
you did send one out. I was watching on my phone.
Yeah, you can go to my website, salemthoughts.com, and topics, and it's toward the top there, that document on the atonement from the Liaison Group.
Okay.
And I think about page 40 is where this starts. Let's see, do I have? Oh, I don't have it here. Let me.
Yeah. I think it was around 40. Yeah, it was good. I read about probably 20 pages or more.
And then later on about, well, let me get that document opened up before I forget here. I can't do that. Okay, let me just do it this way. Excuse me.
Yeah, it was very interesting. As a missionary, he had been studying. That name stuck out to him, Azazel, and he didn't have a computer. He couldn't search, do word searches, but he found, you know, in the Old Testament where it was, and he read through it, and it's almost like he read scriptures that don't exist.
Exactly,
the Lord kind of opened it up to him, and he got this. Peek behind the curtain and read something that used to be there that maybe got pulled out or something, but it explained it very well, as far as like, you can't have an atonement unless you have the two goats, and who were the two goats during the time of Christ. Very interesting.
Yes, indeed. I think it's a
Yeah, page 41 is what your email said.
Yeah, 41 is where that particular story starts.
Yeah, scriptures that don't exist. I guess that's the chapter. But
yeah.
I think even the next chapter kept talking about Azazel. Is that right?
Right. Let me get this thing set up to... let's go ahead and read this together. Michael, you want to read that? Start?
Yeah. A true story by an Eleison contributor. While serving as a missionary, I made it a point to study the scriptures each morning before work and each evening before bed. I was 20 years old at that point, raised in the church and taught from my youth, but I was about to learn something I had never heard of before or since. This particular evening, I somehow stumbled across a holy day detailed in the Old Testament called the Day of Atonement. I was surprised that I had never heard of it because it was considered the most sacred and important day of the year under the law of Moses. I read it in the Old Testament. I read in the Old Testament, primarily from Leviticus, details about the ordinance performed on this holy day. I had never read so much detail about any ordinance. It was amazing. There were several consecutive chapters that provided a detailed account of the institution of the Day of Atonement as well as its history. I read about two goats, one named Jehovah and the other one named Azazel. Both goats slash roles were required to complete the atonement. I had never before heard of this Azazel. The spelling of that name was very strange yet easy to remember for me. One thing I remember being discussed in odd detail was the death of both goats. The Jehovah goat was killed first, and its blood was sprinkled all over the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. They killed the goat named Jehovah, but they did not kill the goat named Azazel. Instead of killing Azazel, the high priest held it by the horns and pronounced all the sins of the people on its head, and then it was sent out of the camp into the wilderness to die. It had to die of its own accord. Nobody could kill it. I read that initially this goat was sent out into the wilderness, a rocky place without food or water, and it would die of dehydration, heat stroke, or the like. Someone was assigned to watch the goat in the wilderness to make sure that it died by itself. The death of Jehovah marked the beginning of an extended fast of at least 25 hours to ensure it was more than one day. During that fast, the people would mourn for their sins and pray for forgiveness. The children of Israel couldn't celebrate the forgiveness of their sins until Azazel was dead and the atonement was complete. Because they couldn't kill the goat, it initially took days for the goat to die. I imagine that during the days between the death of Jehovah and the death of Azazel, the people waited anxiously, thinking about what was happening and why they killed Jehovah and why they waited on the death of Azazel. Eventually, sometime later, the high priest decided that as long as the Azazel goat killed itself, it could die of other means. It wasn't long before the ordinance was changed to speed things up. They decided to send the goat into the wilderness near a cliff and coax it to jump off. They couldn't throw it off the cliff because that would be them killing it. It had to jump off the cliff by itself and thereby kill itself. The point of this part of the ordinance is that Azazel had to kill itself. So, keeping with this principle of the ordinance, it was decided that the goat would be released near a rocky cliff. Then a group of men would form a semicircle around the goat and slowly shrink the semicircle until the goat was pinned between the cliff and the men, so much so that the goat couldn't even turn around. They might at that point yell or surprise the goat, causing it to scare. When it recoiled, spooked, or jumped, it would have nowhere else to go except off the cliff. The goat would actually jump off the cliff and thereby kill itself. As the years passed, the people lost the meaning of the ordinance, and it naturally changed to the men directly killing the goat by nudging the goat off the cliff with their legs. And that eventually eroded the ordinance until it was lost entirely, and a priest would push the goat off the cliff or even throw it off the cliff. By this point, they thought that the point of the ordinance was that the goat died in the wilderness. They entirely forgot that Azazel must kill itself as part of the ritual and symbolism. This cliff was a good distance from the temple, which was the center of the gathered people. It was important to know when Azazel died so they could celebrate the atonement. Watchmen were set on hills between the city and the cliff. When Azazel was dead, a torch was lit or a banner waved, which could be seen in the distance. This reminds me of on the Lord of the Rings when they light the fires at the tops of the mountains and it goes all across. Watchmen were set on the hills between the city and the cliff. When Azazel was dead, a torch or banner was waved and could be seen in the distance. The first watchman would set the signal and relay it with the same signal to the next watchman until the signal reached the temple. It was a fairly fast system to relay the news from miles away. The children of Israel anxiously waited for the signal of Azazel's death. When the message was received at the temple, a great celebration began because the atonement was completed. Over the years, traditions have changed. Some things have been added and some taken away. But to this day, the Jews still celebrate the Day of Atonement, which remains their most holy day of the year. We know this day as, this holiday as Yom Kippur, which is still translated to mean the Day of Atonement.
Okay. Now, what I'm trying to figure out is if we go with that, and I wrote to Sam asking him about, because I'm trying to figure out, you know, this, back where we were. We look at our lesson, and we read this scripture here, so that even to this day, for how much Aaron separated by cast lots two goats, one for Jehovah to atone for the sins of the children of Israel, and one for to hand over for Azazel with the purpose of remembering the agreement of separation between the sentinels. Boy, I can't even talk. Thus Aaron presented the goat that was appointed to Jehovah and will make him a burnt offering for the sin of men before God. But the goat appointed for Azazel was brought alive before Jehovah to make atonement unto him in remembrance of the agreement between them, so that it may be sent into the wilderness for Azazel to remember the agreement. Now, this is tying the goat is the only to deal with this agreement between the sentinels, the watchers that sinned and so forth. I guess we should have read 29. Due to an agreement made between the watchers so that the angels who were rebellious would not come to imprison the remaining vigilantes who remained in the land to fulfill their purpose among their children of men, that they could leave the covenant people in peace. So that seems to be a totally different reason for Azazel. Would you agree with that? So I wrote to Sam, and he gave me an answer. I don't know that if I can agree with his answer, but here's what he wrote. So he wrote, watchers are a general class of angelic beings that were split between the vigilantes, law unto themselves, and the lawful watchers who did not fall away. There are sentinels for both, protecting the rights of the lawful, keepers of law of God and covenant, and the vigilantes, keeper of their own law of union covenants. The sin goat or scapegoat is given for Azazel in the annual dues, symbolizing a temporary or annual peace accord between the two sentinel camps of watcher angels. When the people of the covenant fail to provide the scapegoat for Azazel, the access is given to disturb the peace of the children of the covenant elect ones. Since the fallen angels and vigilantes are no longer bound by the covenant of the watcher class of angels, a second accord is required to establish a peace between the sentinels. So, I'm not sure if I can sort this out. I need you guys' help.
You know, I read some stuff in the Jewish sites about Yom Kippur, and one thing, they tied a ribbon on, a red ribbon on both sheep, goats, both animals, and if they found the goat with the ribbon turned white, then the sins, this ordinance is fascinating because they have to do five separate sacrifices. They have to enter the Holy of Holies three separate times. The high priest normally wears this like fantastic purple garb. They only wear white linen when the high priest does this. Only the most high priest, only the most high priest can do this, the Father, but on earth, in that would be the anyway, nobody else can do it. takes five sacrifices. They have to enter the Holy of Holies three separate times, and it's very elaborate. The Day of Atonement this year would be starts on Friday at the sun when it gets dark, starts at October 11th, Friday to Saturday, till the sun sets. And I was thinking to myself, boy, we may really have our dates totally mixed up, because to me, I think that this was the Yom Kippur might have been the day that Christ was crucified, not December, whatever, not Christmas. And
Well, nothing happened
anyway,
at
this,
Christmas.
yes, but we kind of say, well, we're mixed up. Easter is really the birth, and the Christmas is really the atonement. But I think the atonement actually happened in the fall on Yom Kippur. So in other words, it would be October 11th this year. So those were some of the things I was going through. And I'm done.
Okay.
I know Brother Pratt, our dear friend John, he wrote an article way back in like 1985 about the first Easter. And in that article, he goes through all the different theories of when Christ was born and when Christ was crucified. And he compares that with, what's in the New Testament, what's in the Doctrine and Covenants, and what's in the Book of Mormon. To come up with kind of a fixed date, and then he compares that to the different calendars. He said Christ lived an exact number of days. He calculated that he lived 12,048, 12,048 days. And if you take, I think it was six of April 1 BC on our calendar, if we were to, put our calendar over the top of their calendar, it would have been translated to 6 of April 1 BC born all the way to April, was it April 2nd, 33 AD. If you take 1248 12,048 days between those two dates, you come to the exact Friday when Christ was crucified and resurrected the following Sunday morning. It's a fascinating article. I don't know. I could find the link and drop it in the chat. Or maybe you've got that, Russell.
No, I don't have that link right now. I do remember reading it at one point, though.
Yeah, I think I can pull it up real quick.
So anyway, let me just tie this. I don't know if you've read through the rest of the article and brought out how Azazel was an important part of the atonement, and then the atonement wasn't complete until Azazel died, until Azazel killed himself, and that Judas Iscariot became Azazel, and his death was a part of the atonement. The fact that Judas killed himself and so forth, and then the document gets into talking about the difference between transgression and sin. Most of us have not sinned; we've transgressed, and that's probably going too far from this from our discussion. Okay, so you.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a lot to think about reading that article you sent, Russell. And the scriptures say that Satan entered into the heart of Judas Iscariot. And then he killed himself. So, yeah, I don't know. It was just interesting.
Yeah.
Think about that. And Judas played a very specific role. Yeah, I don't know.
So I guess the question is, can we tie this back into what it's saying here in the Sealed Book of Moses? How does it connect?
Was the Azazel goat, was it also known as the Judas goat? I remember hearing that somewhere, the Judas goat.
I don't know. That could be.
Let's see.
Don't necessarily remember reading that last night, but it kind of, like, if you're calling one the Jehovah goat, then it makes sense to call the other one the Judah goat, Judas goat.
If you look up the definition, I guess it's not related to this, but it can be. A Judas goat is a trained goat used in general animal herding. The Judas goat is trained to associate with sheep or cattle, leading them to a specific destination. In stockyards, a Judas goat will lead the sheep to slaughter, while its own life is spared. Judas goats are also used to lead other animals to specific pens or onto the trucks. They have since fallen out of use, but can still be found in various smaller slaughterhouses in some parts of the world and conservation projects. So, yeah, I remember hearing the term Judas goat, but I didn't know if it was associated with this specifically, or not. But it sounds like they help lead the sheep to slaughter while they themselves are spared.
Yeah, interesting.
That's almost the exact opposite.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh. Thank you for that little tidbit.
Yeah, but maybe, I mean, maybe what we're reading in the seal book is the original arrangement, whereas what we have in Leviticus just kind of talks about how the ceremony was performed. I don't know that we get in Leviticus or in the Old Testament the reason for it, but it does make sense that you've got Christ who sacrificed his life. He did the atonement on the Day of Atonement, and the Judas was the one that went out and hung himself on a tree to fulfill the prophecy.
But the question comes: is the Azazel goat part of the atonement, or is it part of the watchers' agreement? The seal book says it's part of this a watchers' agreement, that it has to be there to maintain that agreement, and I'm bothered by that.
Yeah, well, that was my interpretation. And I was also thinking, wondering if the Davidic servant is going to have to repeat this.
I wouldn't
And I
think
wonder,
so.
well, the I all the ordinances are restored. So I'm not sure. And then I was wondering, well, is it in the Do we do the heifer first to get the tabernacle cleansed? And I guess that will be given by revelation, but I don't think these, I believe these ordinances will all be repeated very soon in the near future.
One of the things that this atonement document brings out is that we all have to become a Christ in the fuller or full, more full sense of it. And so maybe that leads into what you're suggesting. But maybe we don't answer this question totally. Maybe we just go on. What's your thoughts?
Well, how about we read through it, and as we're reading, maybe something will come to us.
Sure. We read how far? Did we get 31 and 32, or?
We didn't read 32.
Okay. Lisa, do you want to read 32 and
Yes.
33?
Is it okay if I read 31 as well?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Thus, Aaron presents the goat that is appointed to Jehovah and will make him a burnt offering by the sin of men before God. But the goat appointed for Azazel must be brought alive before Jehovah to make atonement upon him in remembrance of the agreement between them.
Well, some of the things that the Jews point out, I was reading out of a key Jewish site, is that the father makes the decision to kill the goat. Not, I mean, the article you read were men trying to force that, but the Jews believe that it's the Father, in other words, God, that decides when and how the how this goat that's escaped will be killed. I thought that was interesting. Not men. Men
But
do not make that decision.
the father also does not kill the goat. It has to kill itself, regardless.
Yes, well, yes. I don't know how much will it has or knowledge, but right.
Yeah.
All right. So this is saying it, but the goat appointed for Azazel must be brought alive before Jehovah to make atonement upon him in remembrance of the agreement between them, so that it may be sent into the wilderness for Azazel to remember this agreement. 32. For this reason, it was decreed among the priests that the man who sent the goat to Azazel should wash his clothes and bathe in water before returning to the camp, and only then can he enter among the children of Israel. This is because this man went to meet an evil angel and must purify himself spiritually and physically before returning to the congregation of the one God. So the man taking the goat, I guess, needs to purify himself.
Yeah,
33.
I think we're losing a little bit in translation. I should have pulled up the Portuguese and retranslated to see if it, because I think it's not the man who sent the goat, it's the man who takes the goat, I think is what it really means.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I got.
So that's probably not the high priest, but the one who's sent to go out into the wilderness.
Yeah.
But behold, the giants were obtuse without much reasoning and therefore dependent on their parents. Okay, this kind of goes into something different.
It does.
The verse in Leviticus, I've got that pulled up, 16:26.
Go ahead.
And he that let go the goat for the scapegoat shall wash his clothes and bathe his flesh in water and afterward come into the camp. I think you're right with the lost in translation. Him
Yeah.
who let the goat out into the wilderness, he's got to bathe.
Okay.
Should we read those verses that are on 29? I wonder if that would be helpful.
I've read those and they didn't seem to, in fact, that's what I mentioned to Sam is I read the footnotes to Leviticus 16, 8 and 10 and Daniel. That didn't seem to help me understand this having to do with the sentinels or watchers.
Okay. Well, it could be, lots of things in the scriptures have double meanings and layers. So you
And that's okay for it to have a double meaning. I'm just trying to figure out what the double meaning is. What I'm really saying is that how does putting sins on a goat tie back to the watchers? And having a goat that's got to kill itself, how does that tie back to the watchers? An agreement with the watchers and so forth. Just doesn't seem like the ordinance deals with the watchers at all. Unless I'm just missing something.
I mean, I agree with you. It's not coming together in my head either.
So maybe we think about it, pray about it, and if you come up with an answer as to how this ordinance can do both things, yeah, let us know. And maybe we'll just read on a little bit and be thinking about that in the back of our mind and let our spirit communicate on that or cogitate on it. Dewey, you want to read verse 33?
Yeah, I just was thinking I wanted to correct my statement that about the Davidic servant. He oversees it. When this, I believe this ordinance will be repeated in Israel, and but he oversees it. He's not the high priest that does it. It takes a king, a high priest, and a Levite. It takes
Okay.
all of those have to be present during the sacrifice, from what I understand. So 23, right?
33.
Well, let me get there again. I lost my screen. Okay. For this reason, it was decreed among the priests that the man who sent the goat to Azazel should wash his clothes, bathe in water before returning to the camp.
That's
And only
32.
then,
The next verse.
okay. Sorry, I guess I must have renumbered. But behold, the giants were obtruse without much reasoning and therefore dependent on their parents. In turn, in order not to allow these men of great stature to become slaves to men by reason of their dementia, it was that the sentinel angels, who had been disobedient in abandoning their position with the father, they began to use earthly men to build cities whose architecture was a representation of heavenly things. See, I always thought that scapegoat was an atonement for these sentinel angels that had been disobedient. That wasn't, anyway, that was one. I thought it covered, that atonement actually covered the angels' sin, but maybe that was just how I read it. It's just a thought that popped in. I know we're in two different subjects.
That's a good thought. Thanks for mentioning that.
I find it, I'd like to learn more about the giants, that's for sure. I find it interesting that their parents loved them enough that, anyway, there's a lot of stuff to that's not being said. When I
Yeah,
read this, it's like,
let me read Jude 6. Jude 6 says, and the angels, which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting change under darkness unto the judgment of the great day. That's not a very exciting position to be in.
so the parents of the watchers are these fallen angels who mixed with the daughters of men, right?
I think the
At
watchers
least one of them.
are the fallen angels.
Watchers are the fallen angels that mixed with mankind, and
Right.
their offspring were these giants.
Right,
It
giants.
sounds like they were dumb giants. They didn't have very much intelligence, and so their parents had to kind of tell them everything they had to do. And so they used them and their great strength to build up these cities whose architecture was a representation of heavenly things.
Yeah. And they used the earthly men also to help, but the giants were a big factor that helped build these big cities, apparently. All right, Michael, you want to read 34?
Yeah. So the men began to obtain from the watchers the proper knowledge to mold the iron and to the work of their to work their mixtures. Thus they could forge all sorts of devices from more resistant structures such as weapons and warware and carriages to battle. Their wives learned to mix the herbs and their healing properties, and their young men learned the art of handling the sword and to fight with bow and arrow.
I think the women learned how to use makeup. That's one of the things that they didn't really have for a little bit, and was not necessarily considered a good thing because it tempted the men. Anyway, where did I get that out of Enoch, I think. Somewhere I got that.
That's interesting. So, do I need to share my screen to read this, or do we have the scriptures in front of us?
You got them.
I keep sharing if I need to. I don't know if the screen actually fits your screen as well as reading from your scriptures. That's my question.
Either one works for me. If I get close to the screen, I can read yours.
Okay. So I think that pretty well covers the dealing with the watchers and the giants and so forth. And now in verse 35, we get back to Enoch. Lisa, would you like to read verse 35?
Yes. And it came to pass excuse me, that Enoch went forth preaching to the people of the land of Saran, of Enoch the son of Cain, of Onner, of Heni, of Sam, of Hanner, and the land of Hananiah, settling in the hills and high places to proclaim with a loud voice words against the works of all men who were offended because of him. And it came to pass that Enoch called all the people unto repentance, with the exception of the people of Canaan. And when they heard him, no man laid his hands upon him, for fear had taken hold of all that heard his words. And because many began to say that Enoch walked with God, also began to say that a seer stood up among the people.
It's interesting that he did not speak to the people of Canaan. Is that what I'm reading? He left them to their sins or something, I guess. I think that the descendants of Cain inhabited Canaan. Is that right? And
Yeah, I think so.
the fact that the descendants of Cain had these same names as the descendants of Seth, it makes it really confusing.
It does. Yeah, Enoch, the son of Cain, in the land of Saran, was not the same Enoch who's preaching.
Yes. All right, I think I'll read 36. And so great was his faith that no sentiment from the dark side could shake his emotional foundations, so that Enoch led the people of God and taught them this same principle, to guard their hearts from any and all adverse sentiments that fall upon them, having an unconditional attachment to those feelings which were derived from the greater gift, the love, through the sentiments that emanated from the names of God, just as he had shown them when his enemies went out to battle against him, and he uttered the words of the Lord, that is, the word that had sprung from their feelings, and the earth trembled, and the mountains crumbled, and the stones rolled, and the rivers turned from their natural courses. The roaring lions roared together in the wilderness, many heard and trembled. Ties in close to what Dewey's been talking about. Do you want to read the next verse, 37?
So great was the fear of man that they feared the words spoken by Enoch. For so great was the power of those words that God had given him through their sentiments and faith that even the giants, descendants of the sons of God, were away abandoning their dwellings and their refuge that the watchers had created for them. With the help of earthly men hiding them in caves and deep valleys. That was one thing on the just a side note, when they killed this guy in Iraq, it was in a deep cave when the SEAL team went in. But I mean, I kind of think they're still around myself, hiding somewhere.
Them are still, oh, the
Sorry.
giants you're talking about.
Yeah, the giants, right? Because I noticed they hid in caves, and that's where the SEAL team had to go to get this one. Anyway.
Yeah, you were mentioning this last week, I guess. And did
Yeah,
you send out a
I have
link
to
on
see
it?
if I can refine that. Well, you know, I've had my computer for, it's funny, I'm supposed to be a computer guy. I had a degree in it, but I haven't even hooked up my email yet on my laptop. And my, anyway,
All right.
one of these days I'll get connected with you guys
Okay.
officially.
Yeah, and if you can send out that e-link, that link to the message about killing the giant in the cave or something, you said so you had something.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And, you know, I think there are a few of us that have enough time in the day that they would, you know, they would want to connect all the strings to these stories that of the past to understand the history.
Sure. Yeah, I'd like to see it if you could find it for us.
Okay.
Well, it's interesting because John mentioned last night, right around the time we were having dinner, he was talking about he had just read some of the LDS for folklore about giants, about Bigfoot being Kane or something like that. Yeah. So he was talking about that too recently, just last night.
Yeah.
So.
Right, because I right, that's the two brethren were going along in the wagon, and they were mad at Joseph Smith. I gotta find that story. And it was interesting because it was he was told that if he didn't go back and apologize to Joseph Smith, he would become a descendant of Cain. It was another confirmation of multiple mortalities and what we do, the so to speak, the karma we give out. Anyway, what we do today affects our next life. And he, the path he was running down would literally cut him off, and he would become a seed of Cain the next time he came on earth. Let's see if I can find that story.
I think it's
But
in the Miracle of Forgiveness.
is it? Yeah. I haven't read that for probably 20 years, but right, it's definitely in LDS folklore.
It's not the original source, but it's mentioned in there, which is kind of an interesting offshoot to mention it in that book at all, but
I always wondered if Cain was Bigfoot, how did he survive the
yes.
flood? Right.
Well, I
But
think this sex thing can go on anytime. It's not like we don't have watchers today. So this sin can happen I think anytime. We have watchers on the earth today that watch us. And at least I guess I'm giving my opinion. And they could commit that sin, hence produce giants.
yeah.
Anyway, that's what
Sense.
I'm thinking.
The
So
I was just going to say the link that you sent from Steve about the letter that Pilate wrote to Caesar.
right.
Very interesting that when he invites Jesus to come meet with him, because he doesn't want him to die. He doesn't want the people, he was trying to caution him, but let me just read a little section of that letter. Pilate says, "Being too weak to suppress an insurrection, I resolved upon adopting a measure that promised to restore the tranquility of the city without subjecting the praetorium to a humiliating concession. I wrote to Jesus requesting an interview with him at the praetorium. He came. You know that in my veins flows the Spanish mixed with Roman blood, as incapable of fear as it is of weak emotion." So he's saying, "I'm a pretty tough dude, but when this guy came and stood in my presence," he says, "when the Nazarene made his appearance, I was walking in my basilica, and my feet seemed fastened with an iron hand to the marble pavement, and I trembled in every limb, as does a guilty culprit, though the Nazarene was as calm as innocence itself." So we're
I
talking about Enoch is going and he's, putting the fear of God in these men. I guess it's something similar to that. When he's a holy, righteous man coming among them, they basically, no matter how brave they think they are, when you stand in the presence of this divine being, you kind of have fear, the fear of God put in you.
I read that same thing on YouTube, or I And I found it absolutely fascinating, the pilot's thoughts right before he anyway, they have the historian record of that, and I listened to that on YouTube, and I was just thinking about the Chosen when the pilot meets Jesus. It's so fascinating. It's funny we're all that I found that too. I found that 2 days ago and was listening to it on YouTube.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, let's go on. Michael, you want to read verses 38?
Yes.
Maybe 39, but let's go ahead.
Okay. "And from that time forth, though there have been wars between men, Enoch knew that Jehovah would come to the temple that Enoch had built for the Lord, because he saw angels descending from heaven, bearing testimony of the Father and the Son, and that in the fullness of time he will come to dwell with his people, even as he came to dwell with the people of Enoch before he took them. For they shall be, as in the days of Enoch, a people who live righteously. And the fear of the Lord will come upon all nations, for all will see the Lord cross the sky with his entourage of angels and flaming carriages. And as soon as the news will spread throughout every corner, to the farthest reaches of the inhabited earth, that the Lord descended upon his people and entered the thresholds of the temple that will be erected for his name in the last days, in the place that God predetermined before the foundation of the world, in a Zion that will receive the city of Enoch, whose architecture will design the new Jerusalem. That reminds me of the cover plate of the sealed book, right? The book of Mahanrai Moriankumar. That cover plate shows the city of Enoch, or the heavenly city, descending, and Christ is down in the bubble, and he's kind of directing it as he, you know, reads from the book. It's a beautiful imagery that was carved on that cover sheet.
Yeah.
John has a few pictures on his website. I think we've seen a few of them here as well. There's a detailed explanation or interpretation given by Mauricio of that plate.
Yes. All right. Well, let's read down through 42. I think we'll probably finish up there. I'll read. And from that time, the Lord blessed the church of Enoch and called the people of Zion, called them the people of Zion, because they were all gathered under his laws and commandments. He also blessed the land upon which they had settled among the mountains, for how much they flourished as a peaceful people, having all the feelings in common. And the Lord called the place of the temple of Mount Zion and their city of Salem, because they were of one heart and purpose and lived righteously, and there were no poor among them. And so the people of the church of God began to build under the supervision of Enoch a society of holiness, where their citizens would live in their hearts all the principles of purity required by God and be a holy people. They would therefore be a pure people of heart and called them a covenant people. And it came to pass that Enoch came into the temple before the Lord and spake face to face with him, saying, I know, O Lord, that Zion shall dwell in safety for all the time that thou hast with us. But I fear the people will degenerate after you go, for surely you will not dwell in a temple made by human hands forever. And since we are not a people of war, as soon as you leave this place, the wicked will attack us. And the Lord answered and said to Enoch, I have indeed blessed the city of Zion, and they shall surely come against you as soon as I depart of this place. And I guess we ought to read a 43. Couple more. Yeah, go in 43. And it came to pass, the Lord showed in Enoch all the inhabitants of the earth, and looked and saw that Zion was to be caught up, and also saw the remnant people that were the sons of Adam and were a mixture of this whole seed of Adam, among whom many heard the message preached by Enoch and were present in Zion, having in their hearts the same sentiments derived from the name of God as they had the sons of Adam. I think it's interesting that we hear about how everybody was afraid of Enoch because he could turn the rivers and so forth. And yet that did not cause him to feel any comfort. He was concerned that the wicked would still attack them and overtake them if they weren't protected. And maybe it wasn't just Enoch, but the Lord's protection that's diagrammed in the scriptures. I don't know. Any other comments?
No, other than, I mean, to have Zion and to become the pure in heart, they have to have all these feelings in common, these highest holy sentiments. They must share them. And in that way, they can build up Zion and maintain Zion. I mean, it's one thing to have a fleeting, you know, good feeling for a day or two, but to have that continuously flowing through every heart, every person that makes up that city, that's quite the ordeal. That's a task.
Yeah. So I think we can end there. We read 43, right? And then we'll
Yes.
start next time on continuing with the Enoch in the City of Zion. All right, let me get back to our closing song. We'll stop our stop the recording.